We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful New York City, my man, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm good. I feel like we can check whatever hour we're recording this, 8 p.m. Eastern, off of the very random hours that we recorded this show.
What is the most random time
we did that we've recorded at? We did the post, well, this will tie in with both me and the Big Ten, post Ohio State Oregon National Championship post game sometime in the middle of the night.
Oh, I think we
hit record around midnight, 12:45, something like that in Texas. So That's probably the most extreme, but we've done very early to accommodate weird schedules. We've done random midday. We've done our general evening. So I like this is it's not quite after dark. It's not Solid Verbal after dark, but it's Solid Verbal colon cocktail hour.
Solid Verbal colon cocktail hour. Yes, yeah. I like that. So here is what we are doing. We're actually recording this on a Sunday evening, later than usual on a Sunday. We're used to doing the Sunday thing, just not really ever this late.
Correct.
We want to get the Big Ten out of the way because we've got a loaded week. If you're listening to this, it is Wednesday, August the 14th, maybe sometime after, but certainly in that general time frame. We're recording it early because we've got two live shows, by the way, that we're doing this weekend. The first is going to be on Saturday in Dallas. It's August the 17th. It's at Alamo Drafthouse at 8 p.m. Central Time. Buy your tickets now. Still some left. SolidVerbalTickets.com/Texas. Actually, I should preface this by saying I don't know if tickets will be left, but if they are left, that's where you can find them. And then the very next day, I've said it time and again, hopping on the bird, flying back across the country, going to the nation's capital at Union Stage. We're going to put on a second performance of the Fantasy Things draft, a different show. Maybe a little bit of overlap, but a different show for the most part. August the 18th, it's a Sunday night.
I don't think there's going to be overlap. I mean, other than the two extremely handsome hosts and the general theme of the show, but in terms of the picks and the jokes and the yucks that we're coming up with, that's on the fly, on the spot. So
that's on the fly, that's on the spot. There has to be a little bit of overlap just to tie the two together.
Is that overlap, does it rhyme with Bleen Bland Bleno? Are we doing an all Dean Blandino fantasy things? Just tell me now, because you hold the cards.
That could be the compensatory round.
What would you do if you or we sat next to Dean Blandino on our flight randomly from Dallas to DC? We'd have to engage him in conversation.
We would have to engage him. I don't know if we could talk about putting a giant picture of him behind us at the Venom Theater in Chicago. That could be a little bit weird.
I mean, that's a high point, a life high point. Big Ten country and Dean Blandino.
The good news, though, is if we sat next to Blandino on a flight, we wouldn't have to worry about what content to discuss when we get to D.C.
That's true. Also, we'd be sitting first class because Blandino don't fly coach.
That is, I believe that's checking out, yes.
I would also like to add, and this is nothing I have cleared with you. This is nothing, and you might very well edit this out. Who knows? But we are actually flying into Austin, Texas.
Correct.
We're flying into Austin, Texas on Friday, the day before the Dallas show, because we have friends we'd like to see in Austin, and I have Mexican food I'd like to eat. I'm proposing Saturday morning before we drive, and we're gonna hit the road pretty early, I would say, to go to Dallas.
Yes.
I think we should get some breakfast tacos, hashtag tacos with Ty, and tell people where to go, and we can just have some breakfast tacos with anybody that happens to be in Austin.
That is not a bad idea, Dan.
Because I'm an old man and I'm probably going to want to get some sleep the night before a long day. So I want to be out late. But let's call it Saturday morning, Pueblo Viejo.
Oh.
We're getting breakfast tacos. How about that?
I am down with Pueblo Viejo.
Come out and we will give you we'll put the time on our Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Reddit, whatever. Tacos with Ty in Austin Saturday morning the 17th. Is that correct?
Yeah. 17th, yeah.
Saturday morning the 17th, hashtag tacos with Ty, and then we're going to be on our way, and you can wish us well, and hopefully we'll see more people in Austin, in Dallas that night, but that is my proposition.
We will start the caravan up to Dallas from Pueblo Viejo.
Done. Let's do it.
Bring the cowbells.
More details to come.
More details to come. We're doing a show then the very next day in DC, solidverbaltickets.com/DC. If you're going to be in the DMV and would like to stop on by the live show, got a special guest. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Correct.
We're excited. I have not begun preparing for this yet.
Well, we have our master list of about 50 items.
We have a
bank of. Yeah.
I don't need to drone on any more about that. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, also on Reddit, reddit.com/r/solidverbal. Biverballers, Four Verballers is the subreddit started by our good friend Peter Hoffman, who's doing a lot of work, God's work, really, pulling together some cool AMAs. So check out reddit.com/r/solidverbal. Dan, what are we doing tonight exactly?
We're having ourselves a big moment. We're going to talk about the Big 10-14. We have a lot of teams that are very interesting to us. The season is, a couple weeks away, basically? And this is a pretty significant conference in the Midwest, Ty. I don't know if you're familiar.
We're
going to talk Big Ten teams. We've split it up and we're going to attack it in the way that we have been attacking. We've done the ACC. We've done the Pac-12. We've done the Big 12. We've split it and we're going to ask each other questions and figure out what the other person is curious about and try to answer their question to the best of our ability.
Oh, by the way, also going to lump in Notre Dame with this show.
Yeah, I got to think of a Notre Dame question.
Lump it in Notre Dame as well. I guess technically we should have lumped them in with the ACC, but we were young and dumb and unprepared. And now here we are lumping in Notre Dame with more of their geographic partners in the Big Ten.
Do you wish they were in the Big Ten, Ty?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I always have.
Do you not want to save Notre Dame for our UMass specific episode?
I don't, actually. I want to go.
Saved by the Bell? That's what we're calling it.
Well, Notre Dame plays Michigan and. There's a lot of tie in here with the Big Ten. So we'll get to Notre Dame here in a little bit. Daniel, where do we want to start here? Let's get into the Big Ten.
Let's do it. Mash all those buttons, please.
That wasn't
way
bad, right?
It. That you real the boo-doo-doo-boo-doo-doo-boo. That was a good way.
You know what else I have here? I didn't realize this until now.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, when we were talking about the Big Ten West, you put together what you called Big Ten underscore West underscore death metal. It sounds like this. It's very hard. It's very edgy for the Big Ten West. And maybe we can start there, Dan, because my takeaway in looking at that side of the conference is that every team is really freaking young. And it's sort of wide open. You can make a case for a couple teams, a couple different teams other than the usual suspects to have a puncher's chance at winning that side of the conference.
Sure. Yeah. I was just thinking of metal lyrics to set to, like, can the offensive line of Northwestern be any better? Is there any hope for Northwestern to have an offense? Oh, and I'm not in a good place. So let's start with the Big Ten West because we have the metal. Ask me a question.
I want to start with Nebraska because Nebraska is a very trendy pick right now in the Big Ten West. I don't know if it's warranted. That's sort of my question for you. I'm going to go back to something I said a couple shows ago. I think it comes down to the defense on Nebraska. Everyone's talking about the offense and Adrian Martinez and Scott Frost, what he can do with that side of the ball. That's very exciting. But I think if it's going to happen for Nebraska, it needs to happen on the defensive side. Do you think you've got enough confidence in the Nebraska Cornhusker defense to warrant such high expectations in year two now under our boy Scott Frost?
No, but that doesn't mean I don't have long-term confidence that this defense can get to an interesting place, because there is that connection both with Frost and then his defensive coordinator, Eric Chenander. Chenander, I guess.
Are there any vowels in that word?
There are very few. He was an outside linebackers coach at Oregon. He was a Jerry Azzanaro guy and Nick Aliotti guy. So I remember him well, and he was pretty highly thought of as a recruiter. So in terms of building depth on this Nebraska defense, I am optimistic that they're going to get to a good place. We've talked about this in episodes past, whether it was Iowa State or whoever we were talking about in the ACC, in terms of combination. I mean, it's Clemson, quarterback and defense.
Sure.
And Nebraska in the West has the quarterback is what it appears in Adrian Martinez. But I don't know, this defense at its best, this defense is very thin. I like them up front on the line, and at linebacker it gets pretty rough. It seems okay in the back end, but still, they were really horrid against the run last year. And that worries me, because if you don't have to be complicated against this Nebraska team and be okay, that doesn't spell, you know, division title. So they weren't great on third down last year. They were not great in the red zone. They gave up a lot of big plays. So yes, if they fix their situational D and they tighten up, they bend but don't break, that will go a long way. But offensively, you're focusing on the defense, which is right, because I think they're still pretty thin there. Offensively, who's Adrian Martinez throwing to? JD Spielman.
Sure.
And maybe Wandale Robinson's the big incoming true freshman, big recruit. The offensive line's still up in the air, but should be okay. Their leading returning rusher, Maurice Washington, has some legal issues in California that are pretty serious, and he is still away from the team, or not. His status is in question, and they have a Georgia Tech transfer there. But they're just thin, and they're building it up. They've recruited pretty well. But in terms of confidence, like, when you look at other teams, like, okay, well, they lose this many starters, but these many snaps were played by their rotation guys. Nebraska doesn't have that to me. So to me, their best case scenario, yes, is probably competing for the West, but that's health and a major step up on defense that I can't feel great about. So the best case is probably a 9-3 year.
You want to know what I do feel great about?
What?
I'm looking at the schedule right here.
Oh, it's a nice schedule.
Well, if you were going to script,
it is and it isn't.
It is and it isn't. Okay, so obviously they've got a really tough matchup end of September. It's at home against Ohio State. That is most likely a loss. We'll get into Ohio State in a little bit, but
It's Ohio State, Northwestern, and at Minnesota in a row.
In a row,
yeah,
in a row. That is a tough stretch. Mm-hmm. End of September, early part of October. But by and large, the tough games are at home. On the road, you've got a non-conference spot against Colorado. You've got a road game at Illinois. You've got a road game at Minnesota. Minnesota is tricky.
Yeah.
You've got a road game at Purdue and a road game at Maryland.
Purdue.
You're home against Wisconsin, home against Iowa, home against Ohio State, Northwestern. That ain't bad, dog. I'll take
that. Who do they miss? And they miss Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, right?
That is correct.
And they also have NIU, who the last time they played, they almost won. Tanner Lee almost didn't throw interceptions. I think that the non-conference, this might be a theme in the West, might be a little bit trickier than it appears. But yes, the fact that there is no Michigan, who absolutely took it to them last season, no Michigan State defense, and that was a wild weather game last year, and then no Penn State, who should have a pretty good team this year. It's a nice schedule for sure.
Yeah.
Their worst case, though, is losing those 50-50 high-scoring affairs, still giving up too many big plays. They're bowl eligible, but barely, I think at 6-6.
Yeah, or if the injury bug bites the way it did Michigan State last year, that could spell trouble
Wisconsin
for Nebraska.
Wisconsin last year, yeah.
That could spell trouble given their depth. But all in all, I think if you're a Nebraska fan, you've got a lot to look forward to. This will be an exciting year. You've got the schedule to contend here in the West, which is fun.
All right, let's go to the East. Let's start at the top. They won the Rose Bowl last year. They made a coaching change. There's going to be a new starting quarterback, a new defensive coordinator. Ohio State, for all of the attention Justin Fields is getting, that Ryan Day is getting, that, you know, what this new era is going to look like, what it's getting, they got very strangely leaky on defense last year with the clear best talent in the conference, if not the country. So when you look at the defense that now Greg Madison is taking over from the co-defensive Schiano and what's his name? Alex. He's at Oklahoma this year.
Oh, Alex Grinch.
Alex Grinch, correct. It's late for me. Do they miss in recruiting? The secondary seemed to be off. Is it just a development thing? Is it a scheme thing? How easy is this fix for Greg Madison and the defensive staff in Columbus?
Well, the problems last year were threefold.
Okay.
First off, they had turnover from the year before in secondary, which just inherently meant that there was going to be something of a step back in the defensive backfield. It happens, even at Ohio State.
Year over year, they were pretty good for the last 3 years before last year.
But there was a step back. Jordan Fuller made the All-Big Ten team, and they moved him around a bunch trying to plug gaps. This was a defense that played a lot of man-to-man. They needed to use him in different spots, and he couldn't cover all of them. So that's the first thing. I think the secondary took something of a step back. Mm-hmm. Secondly, and more broadly, Greg Schiano's system was a very rigid 4-3 scheme. And it worked when they had better athletes at linebacker. That same level of athleticism, though, just it wasn't there with the group they had last year. They had trouble matching up with slot guys like they could otherwise in the past. He was adamant. Greg Schiano was adamant about playing three linebackers to the extent where it actually hampered their ability to defend against unbalanced sets, against plays with motions, sweeps, that whole thing. Fans were screaming.
Getting more speed on offense. You know, a lot of teams go base nickel kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Fans were screaming, try to not do that. And he was insistent upon playing those three linebackers.
Okay.
The good news, bad news scenario this year is that all three of those guys are back. But given the change, I think, in leadership on the defensive side, we might see a little bit of a different take on how exactly to play more of a spread system like we're seeing across college football.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, they tried to get as much athleticism as they could, where they could, and that was along the defensive line. But the manner in which they did it was very risky, and it left the secondary more vulnerable. So there was a whole systemic thing going on with Ohio State. If you look at the numbers, look, they need to get better on defense. You called it out. 50th in points per game allowed, 79th in yards per rush at 4.5 per rush. It's a lot.
Right.
And then 51st in yards per attempt in the passing game. 7 yards per attempt is just not good enough for Ohio State. Now, the thing about Ohio State is this. I could probably do an entire show just me talking about the Buckeyes. I studied them intently.
You should do a one-man show in the greater Allentown, Bethlehem, Northampton
just
area.
Ohio State? Just
tie on the Bucks. Yeah.
Just Ohio State. I could probably
just
do
just you
that.
Getting up there, you in a chair, and a PowerPoint presentation, because You actually were very pissed that you did not know about the National PowerPoint Championship. So this could be your big comeback.
It could indeed.
Yeah.
Ohio State this year is the epic battle of turnover versus talent. That's going to be the theme. They've got turnover on the coaching staff, at quarterback, at wideout, along the line, along the defensive line, but a ton of talent in the form of blue chips that they have amassed over the last couple of years. They've got the top blue chip ratio in the country, which is something our friend Bud Elliott keeps track of. How many blue chippers are being recruited or signing to your school? More often than not, there is a correlation between that talent, who makes the playoff, who ends up winning the national championship. So I think specific to the defense, it's those three things. But the more existential question now, Dan, is Urban Meyer's gone.
Yeah, he is.
We can't do this preview without talking about Urban Meyer. Ohio State won 12 games last year, including the bowl. This is still a really good football team. albeit some issues on defense. Now we got Ryan Day taking over. How do you feel about Ryan Day taking over?
Pretty good. I mean, all things considered, like the continuity, we've seen it succeed at big places with a successful offensive mind stepping in after time learning on the job.
And sure.
He obviously stepped in last year with Urban Meyer's suspension to start the season and looked pretty good. And by all accounts, whether it's on the road recruiting, it's with assistants, I like the hires that he made and filling out his staff. I think there's good reason to feel good about Ryan Day landing Justin Fields, who is not Dwayne Haskins. And this is something you can probably speak to with Ohio State because you're doing a one-man show at the regional theater out there.
That's right.
But this is the first year that's also interesting to me where these past years it was Braxton Miller, JT Barrett, Cardale Jones. It was JT Barrett, Dwayne Haskins. This year it's Justin Fields, Gunnar Hoke transfer from Kentucky.
That's
it's
right.
A different looking room. And that to me is pretty intriguing.
Ryan Day is your new coach. Part of why he was brought on to be the coach is because he's had a knack for developing quarterbacks.
Yeah.
To help him do that with Justin Fields, they hired Mike Yurcich to be the new quarterback coach, who was at Oklahoma State for a while.
Yurcich. Yeah.
So I think he has done a pretty good job assembling a staff. My only bit of hesitation here is that coaching changes are a bit of a coin flip. They always are. Even when you sometimes think you have the guy, it just doesn't always turn into Lincoln Riley. Sometimes it turns into Larry Coker, where it's good for a while, and then something happens, and it's not so good. I don't know if Ryan Day is more Lincoln Riley or Larry Coker. We don't have enough data at this point. We don't have enough data. I like what I've heard. He was good in the early part of last season. I hope that continues, but this is ever the question with a coaching change. Can he continue what the legend built?
Dwayne Haskins, good first-year starter?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd say so. And you'd be if Brian Kelly were to leave, if he left after last season and Urban Meyer stayed at Ohio State and Notre Dame hired away Ryan Day, you'd be pretty pumped about that, right?
I would feel fine about that, yes.
Yeah.
But okay. I'm just saying it's not a slam dunk, which is why I'm urging a little bit of caution here. But yeah, he brings in Justin Fields. He's a new quarterback. He was a five-star, the number two overall prospect in the 2018 class. He's a big kid. 6'3", 225. He can really run. There's a lot to like here. Brings over Mike Yurcich. Day himself, like I said, has a knack for developing quarterbacks.
Sick.
He also went out basically and nuked the entire defensive coaching staff. He kept Larry Johnson, the defensive line coach, but made a bunch of changes to try and amend things on that side of the ball, which we addressed a little earlier. The offense, though, will be interesting now with Fields because there are a couple other items that I think need to be mentioned. J.K. Dobbins, very exciting player. Mm-hmm. He's now the full-time running back. He's never had like that number one alpha role in the backfield. I'm curious to see if we get some action out of Master Teague the third. I love the name. Kid's a bowling ball.
Have you seen DeMario McCall play? He's good.
I know. Master Teague, though, is a bowling ball with eyes. I hope he gets some carries. I want to see what Dobbins can do as they increase his workload. They had some turnover at wideout. They've got talent at wideout, but they've got turnover there. They also lost four offensive linemen to the NFL.
That's fine. They've recruited well.
So we'll see. I don't know. The thing that I will say about the schedule, and then we should probably move on, because again, I could do this for a half hour. Two back-to-backs. End of September and first week of October at Nebraska, home against Michigan State. Then the last 2 weeks of November, home against Penn State. Close out the year on the road at Michigan. That's what's going to define this season for the Buckeyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally is. And they lost a bunch of receivers, but have recruited well there as well. KJ Hill's back, right?
KJ Hill is back, yes.
He'll be good. So best case is what? They run the table?
Best case, they run the table, yeah. They've got talent. They've got the talent to run the table here.
Worst case, I guess, is Justin Fields is just a guy and teams stack the box and the offense is fits and starts kind of thing and the defense doesn't really fix itself. And so what's that worst case?
The worst case might be three losses on the schedule.
Okay.
I don't believe in that, but there's not a lot of depth to your earlier point about Justin Fields behind him.
Right.
If something were to go south in that regard, that could be a problem. Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on.
Let's move on, Dan. I want to talk about Wisconsin.
I'm always curious when you do that, if you're going to say, let's move on, Dan. I want to talk about suits. No. I want to talk about customs. Okay.
No, maybe
let's talk
bit,
Wisconsin.
Maybe a little bit later we'll do that.
Oh, a tease.
Who is playing quarterback for Wisconsin this year? And furthermore, does it matter since they still have Jonathan Taylor tailback, who will clearly be the focal point of that offense?
Can I just say, I don't know.
That's why I'm asking the question. I don't know either.
Jack Cohn appears to be ahead. And by the way, this is not meant to be mean. This is not meant to be accusatory. But try not to name your kid something that ends with the letter in which his last name is going to start. Because Graham Mertz sounds like Zach Ertz's little brother. Mm. And it's Graham Mertz. And I hate that we have to do that for the next however long he's playing college football.
Graham Mertz.
Jack Graham Mertz. Country Graham Mertz.
Right. That's good.
I hate myself. I just Bermanized something. Jack Cohn's probably going to be the guy. It is going to matter because Wisconsin goes from good to potentially really good when they have an efficient quarterback. And Jack Cohn does not need to light the world on fire. Jack Cohn does not need to be a crazy dual threat kind of guy, but he needs to be a lot better than he was last season. And Alex Hornibrook had a pretty horrible year. He threw a ton of picks. Jack Cohn comes in when Hornibrook's hurt and just not performing and is not that great. He throws picks less often, which is not the greatest compliment you can pay somebody. Wisconsin's got a new offensive line in front of him. The good news for Cohn, if he is going to improve, he has a pretty nice set. And aside from Jonathan Taylor touchdown, that's what we call him, right? Or tailback.
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 You can go touchdown if you want.
Nah, I like tailback. AJ Davis, or Danny Davis, AJ Taylor, and possibly because he was just acquitted and his status is still up in the air, Quintez Cephas might be back for Wisconsin. So he could have a nice array of players to be throwing to. Defensively, they have to be healthier. They're still, I mean, the linebackers are pretty new. A lot of what Wisconsin succeeded in doing was shutting teams down on defense. And when they had the ball, just pounding them and just wearing teams down. And so I look at this defense. They're pretty green up front. You know, there's a decent amount of experience in the back, but it's going to have to be a situation which somebody else is shouldering the load outside of Jonathan Taylor tailback if they're going to get to threatening double digit wins. So the best case scenario after last year, which, you know, the offense was rough outside of JTT, the defense was, they were okay against the run, but pretty bad against the pass. The best case scenario for the Badgers, for Bucky Badger, offensive line comes together, offense bounces back. Somebody who, you know, is a gravitational player or continues to be on the outside, and the defense improves. I'm going to say 9-3 is probably their best case right now with a chance to get to 10 in the bowl game. Worst case is Jack Cohn is still below average. And, you know, some games the defense shows up, some games doesn't, and they go 7-5. That's the worry for me, that it's more of the same if Mertz is not ready to be that full-time guy and Jack Cohn is the guy at least in the beginning. And then it's a will they, won't they with who are they starting come week 6. I don't know. The schedule's not bad. They have, Michigan in September. They're on the road at Ohio State this year. They have a bye before Iowa. They're at Nebraska. They're at Minnesota, which we'll get to, I think, is interesting. So it's fine.
How much letdown look-ahead potential is that October 19th game? It's at Illinois. It's between Michigan State at home in Camp Randall Stadium, homecoming. And the week after Illinois, it's on the road in Ohio Stadium against the Buckeyes.
Is Trevor Lawrence and all of his receivers going to say, why don't we just go to Champaign and be legends? If that's not happening,
right. Fair enough.
I don't think Illinois has a quarterback to really put the fear of life into anybody.
Fair enough.
Okay. I'll do apologies to Brandon Peters.
Fair enough. Where do you want to go next?
All right, let's stick with Brandon Peters' old team. Let's just get it out of the way.
Let's do it.
So a lot of what I'm seeing about, I've seen actually two things about Michigan this offseason. One, Josh Gattis is coming in. We're gonna modernize this.
Modernize.
We're going to spread them out. We're finally going to get to the 21st century. 4D chess on this offense.
Right.
The other thing I've seen was describing Michigan's defense in the way that people describe Clayton Kershaw. where they're just like, if you take out this one start, if you take out this one playoff game where he gave up 44 earned runs against the Cardinals, he's pretty good. And that I've seen that about Michigan's defense. And you take out the Ohio State game, and what are we talking? We're talking about pretty successful guy in defense. So let's stick with the modernizing. What does that actually look like? What is a modern Michigan offense run by Shea Patterson with, we'll edit in a running back to get one. And, you know, good but kind of beat up receivers and a good offensive line. What does that quote unquote modern offense look like?
Well, you know, Harbaugh kind of started modernizing it last season when he brought Shea Patterson over, who was not the kind of quarterback who would typically fit his system.
Yeah.
And hired a new line coach. I always screw up his name. Is it Ed Warriner?
Warriner. Yeah.
It's so easy. It's right in front of me.
Yeah.
I know the guy. We've been talking about him for years. I just can't say his name.
He's well known around the globe, eh?
Well known around the globe, eh? He's got a wealth of knowledge about the running game, about spread good offenses. Coach. Really good coach. Mm-hmm. This was definitely, I think, the start of now what we see going on in 2019, bringing over Josh Gattis. I think what you're going to see, if you talk about more modernized, I think you're going to see more tempo. You're hardly ever going to see a huddle. And you're going to see more RPOs.
Okay.
Gattis is big on this, all right? He's trying to, I don't know if you saw this, he's trying to invent his own hashtag, speed in space.
Okay.
He's been tweeting that out. That's going to be the theme for this offense. And, you know, hey, it's kind of a gimmick thing, but speed in space is definitely not how you would define the old Jim Harbaugh system, where you line up under center and give it to somebody who's big and a lot of
They were in the gun a lot last year.
And tight ends. But no, I'm saying last year was the start of it. This year, I think we get to the next level now with Josh Gattis. I'm familiar with Gattis from his time at Penn State. And honestly, if you're a Penn State fan, you miss Josh Gattis because the wide receiving core has not been the same since he left. If you're a Michigan fan, you get excited because maybe you see a flavor of what Joe Moorhead did at Penn State, what he's done a little bit at Mississippi State. Bruce Feldman depicted this hire pretty well in an article. He talked about Harbaugh basically calling up Josh Gattis, giving him full control of the offense and essentially the job within 20 minutes. Like, he knew this was the guy he wanted to get. That's something, if I'm a Michigan fan, that gets the juices flowing. You sort of know what you're going to get
though?
Here. I think so.
Okay.
Why would it not?
I didn't think the Michigan offense was that bad last year. Michigan, I mean, they were bad against Notre Dame. They scored 10 offensive points, right? It was 10 points and a 98-yard kickoff return touchdown. And then it wasn't the offense that was, I mean, it wasn't great against Ohio State, but that was a game at halftime. And the defense just could not keep up with Dwayne Haskins and all those receivers for Ohio
State. There were two 19-minute chunks that defined.
Yes, this was what Nicole Auerbach
wrote.
This is what Nicole wrote.
Yeah. For The Athletic.
Yeah.
There were two 19-minute chunks, one in the beginning part of the year against Notre Dame, one at the end of the year against Ohio State, during which the defense had these momentary lapses. And that really did alter the course of the season. Otherwise, though, you could really make the case that this might have been the best defense in the country. So they had their moments and they need to cut back on those mistakes for sure against better competition. But like, it was still pretty damn good last year.
Yeah, it was a top probably 20-25 offense in the country. And the defense was one of the best 10 or 15 defenses in the country, if not higher. So they were just, they were losers in moments. They were not, you know, in need of an overhaul. And so that it worries me that there's going to be new verbiage, that there's going to be confusion at times. I don't know.
Well, that's fair. That's a fair point.
Seems all right.
That's fair.
I'm just curious. I'm curious that they're going to overthink it sometimes. And, you know, he hasn't been an offensive coordinator. I saw that there was a feud between he and Mike Locksley Mike Locksley not giving him credit. And media day, I don't know. Whatever it is, I'm curious. I think it's a high-risk maneuver that could pay huge dividends, but curious to see if it wasn't the most needed thing overhauling this offense.
Some other quick factoids and then we'll move on. The line should be a strength of this team because they've got four guys back. It's going to help Shea Patterson. Hopefully it's going to help the rushing attack as you said, they lost both Caron Higdon and Chris Evans. We can edit in a running back name here, but
I think it's going to be a true freshman who I think is from Southern California. Trebuchet.
Yeah, whoever gets the carries,
right?
The line should benefit them. Of course, Shea Patterson's back, pretty good in his first year. There was room for improvement. I'm curious to see now what he does with this system. The big spot that I am watching now, especially given the fact that we've got Josh Gattis coming up from Alabama.
Yeah.
Wide receiver. Somebody's got to step up. I thought it would be Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Yeah.
But he didn't really step up and be that alpha. So it needs to be him.
Good.
He was good.
Nico Collins.
It needs to be Peoples-Jones or Nico Collins or Ronnie Bell, who's a burner, or even Tariq Black, if he can stay healthy. Somebody's got to step up and I think be that alpha target out wide. And then defensively, you know, we've talked about it in the offseason. Rashawn Gary, Chase Winovich, Devin Bush, they're all gone. So the work is cut out for Don Brown a little bit.
They got so many good dudes, though.
But they've got so many good dudes.
Oh, my God. LaVert Hill? Come on. What's his name? Carlo Kemp inside?
It would really help if Kalik Hudson went back to 2017 form. That would be nice.
I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be fine. I think the secondary is going to be fine. This I hate regurgitating platitudes like this could be the most athletic defense Don Brown has had at Michigan. But there is some evidence that it could be one of the faster defenses in the country. It should be a very fun, angry defense.
It should be. It's not an easy schedule. It is not an easy schedule.
By the way, Trebuchet is, I believe, a cannon or a slingshot of some kind.
Okay.
They could be starting Zach Charbonnet. I don't know how you pronounce it. He's a freshman. I'll learn. But that's his
name. Is that French?
Trebuchet. I have no idea.
All right. I'm excited about Michigan. I got them coming out of the East this year.
We'll interesting. What is it about Michigan before we move on to the next team in the West that has them, aside from playing the game in Ann Arbor, in a better place than Ohio State, another presumed favorite?
I am not entirely sure what Ohio State's going to look like.
Okay.
So coaching factor. Turnover. Yeah, I go back to what I said before. Coaching turnover brings with it a fair amount of uncertainty. And
okay.
We don't know what we're going to get out of Justin Fields. Yeah, there's a fair amount of turnover there, even though they've got blue chips out the wazoo. I'm just not as confident in them. We'll talk about Michigan State. I like Michigan State too, but the issue was offense last season. To what end will they be able to repair that? Well,
yeah,
many seasons. And then Penn State could go any one of 1,000 different directions. So Michigan is a team I feel best about right now.
So you mentioned a tough schedule. So that is what?
Well, with the exception of road games at Penn State and I guess at Wisconsin, if you want to lump them in, all of their hardest games
are at home.
All their hard games are at home. It's just the competition isn't the easiest. We're not talking about a cream puff schedule here. I'm looking at it. We've got Army week two, which we've already labeled as a interesting game.
Yeah. Danger.
Notre Dame at home. Michigan State at Indiana. Ohio State to close out the year. That Indiana game's one that I have circled as a letdown look ahead spot. There's a Penn State game in there. There's an Iowa game in there. This isn't the easiest schedule by any stretch.
By the way, I did notice, because you mentioned the Army game, Don Brown, and this is not on our fantasy things list. I don't believe it ever has been. Don Brown said last week, Michigan defensive coordinator, we've been practicing against the option since March. It's like, great. Awesome.
That's a good one.
Cool.
I love it.
It should be, but it's not a fantasy thing. All right. So you have them coming out of the East.
I do.
Okay. What do you want to know about in the West?
I want to know about Iowa. I want to talk to our kids about Iowa.
So do I.
They've got a brutal schedule, and that's saying something because they don't even have to play Ohio State.
Yeah.
How confident are you that they get the running game back to where it's been in years past, at least to a serviceable level, so that it can complement Nate Stanley and move this team forward offensively?
They took a step forward last year in Big Ten play. It was a rough going early on, but in against Big Ten teams, they were actually better than they were in 2017. So with the linemen that they bring back, with they're in good shape at running back. What's Mekhi? I was going to say Mekhi Phifer.
Mekhi Sargent?
Mekhi Sargent or Mekhi Phifer. Who's to say about eligibility?
Mekhi Phifer could get 1.2 yards per carry.
That's true. Well, yeah, probably. With Mekhi Sargent there, and I liked him in an all-purpose way last year. I thought he showed out pretty nicely at times. Bringing back Nate Stanley, my guy. We know he can be good. There are times where he's not so good. The big hole left by TJ Hockenson and Noah Fant is worrisome to me, both in the pass and run game, just because they were gravitational players that theoretically should be opening things up or should have opened things up for Iowa. So if the offensive line can get better in run blocking, I think Iowa's going to be in a pretty good place offensively. But at the same time, I don't see that there needs to be motivation on Iowa's end. They go, 8-4, 9-4 every year, and they seem happy with that. This seems to be a year that they're circling as a, this is a great situation, even with the schedule. Iowa State on the road week 3. I think they have, what, they're at Michigan, and then they get Penn State in Iowa City the following week in October.
Yep.
Their November's pretty tough on the road at Northwestern and Wisconsin and Nebraska. But the way they play, I mean, it's going to be more of the same. So, yeah, I think they can be a little bit better with that experienced quarterback stretching the field, even if I don't love their receivers and pass catchers. They win two of those fourth quarter lead games that they had last year that they blew. They're 10-2, and I don't know how much differently we feel about Iowa. So that's sort of where I'm at right now. Best case is they're 10-2. They run a little bit better, and they look a lot like they did last year. And the great news for them, too, is defensively, they might have the best rush end if it's not Chase Young in the Big Ten and AJ Epenesa. They're in a good place up front. They're strong at safety. I don't know. It feels like we're saying the same thing most years about Iowa.
It does.
And so, well, they got to replace this big tight end. And, they should be good along the lines. Quarterback is generally decent, but they can't really run the ball. I mean, this whole thing has been from 2018, and you probably didn't even realize it. So, if they're worse at moving the ball without the tight ends, if the new corners struggle, which year over year they keep finding new corners that are amazing, they'll go 7-5. But it's probably, again, going to be 8 or 9 wins.
They're Utah East.
What a weird sister state that Iowa and Utah could make for each other. Let's go to Michigan State.
Okay.
Because I'm a glutton for punishment. After last year's, and this one's in quotes, offense and the offseason, I'm going to be very kind again, coach reshuffling.
Yeah, what's that?
It's just, I don't know what it was.
I have the full list here, by the way. It's incredible.
Thank you. If Michigan State's going to, if they're going to heal on offense, if they're going to begin to heal as an offense, who or what will be that medicine?
Well, first off, heal is the proper word to use because they were nicked up on offense. And by nicked up, I mean pretty much destroyed because of injuries. Brian Lewerke hurt his shoulder, didn't really recover. His wide receiving core was all banged up. Felton Davis blew out an Achilles. Cody White broke his hand. Darryl Stewart hurt his ankle. LJ Scott wasn't healthy for most of the year either. So they were just banged up. It was the first time.
The Felton Davis thing was brutal because it was so
brutal.
Good.
Yeah. He really was. He was great. And it just sucks. That's football.
Yeah.
This was the first year ever for Mark D'Antonio where he had exactly zero offensive players make the All Big Ten team.
Wow.
Little factoid for you.
Well deserved.
Well deserved. The other thing here, separate from injuries, is that the offensive line really was comically bad at run blocking.
Yeah.
And, by every blocking metric we have when you look at Bill C's numbers and all these stuff rates and what does it all mean? I'll tell you what it means. In all of them, Michigan State's been terrible the last 2 years. And that needs to improve if they want to try and move forward now in 2019. They got to stay healthy. They got to heal literally. And then to heal figuratively, they got to figure out something along the offensive line. Now, the good news for them is that they bring back a ton. They've got 17 returning starters. It's the fourth most in the country, 9 on offense, 8 on defense, which I'll talk about here momentarily. But you mentioned the coach shuffle. This is interesting to me. It's interesting because we saw what Ryan Day did at Ohio State, essentially ripping down the defensive coaching staff to the studs, the one stud being Larry Johnson. Mm-hmm. Mark D'Antonio ain't here to cause no trouble, Dan.
Yeah.
He's just here to do the coaching staff shuffle.
Right.
Did you get that joke?
No, I gotcha.
You got that.
I'm just letting it breathe. Okay.
Okay. Former quarterbacks coach Brad Salem is now the offensive coordinator slash running backs coach.
Mm-hmm.
Former offensive coordinator slash running backs coach Dave Warner is on the staff still as the new quarterbacks coach, a position he coached at Michigan State from 2007 to 2012. Former co-offensive coordinator and tight ends coach, Jim Bowman, he's now the offensive line coach. Former offensive line coach, Mark Statton, now coaches the tight ends, a position he coached previously from 2007 to 2010. And former assistant defensive backs and special teams coach, Don Treadwell, now coaches the wide receivers, a position he coached from Michigan State, at Michigan State from 2007 to 2010. And if you're wondering what happened to the wide receivers coach, Terry Samuel, well, now he's assistant defensive backs coach.
This Dan, feels like an episode of Undercover Boss where everybody's undercover. Where it's like, we went to the Frito-Lay factory and 11 different executives were undercover.
This is musical chairs. It's Back to the Future. They're trying to go back to 2007. And maybe it'll work. Mark D'Antonio's a loyal guy. He values loyalty. He wants to try and keep the same guys in place, and God help him here. What helps him, I think, a lot is that their defense is going to be elite. I'm not going to go through and talk about all the names, but Joe Bocci coming back at linebacker, Josiah Scott a lockdown at cornerback. Kenny Willeeks was the Big Ten Defensive Lineman of the Year. And then we've got the two brothers. I looked up phonetically how you say Mike Panashuk and Jacob Panashuk.
Okay.
There are two brothers along the line who you might be excited to know talk Polish to each other to call out signals.
Is Rocky Lombardi back?
Rocky Lombardi is back, but he is not playing quarterback because Brian Lewerke is your presumed starting quarterback.
Is he the assistant offensive coordinator? What is Rocky Lombardi doing? Is he just the backup quarterback?
I guess he's just the backup quarterback with a cool last name.
What a name. The whole name. Rocky Lombardi. It's like naming your kid Terminator Predator. It's great.
It's a tough Big Ten road schedule. Big Ten road schedule. They're in good position to start 5-0. Week 3 at ASU is a bit of a bellwether game, maybe more for ASU, but definitely a measuring stick to see where we're at with this hopefully healthy Michigan State offense. Their season is going to be defined by a 6-week stretch that they have between early October and mid-November when they go to Ohio State, to Wisconsin, home against Penn State, home against Illinois, and then to Michigan.
Okay.
With a bye.
So what is your clearest answer? It's not at all difficult to yuck it up and say, hardy har, Mark D'Antonio shuffled the deck, shuffled the chairs on the whatever. Is it just health? Because it doesn't feel like when you watch recent Michigan State offenses,
it's not
just health. That's the cure to what happened.
Well, it's the most immediate cure to get better because it really got in their way last year. But they need to figure out the offensive line and the running game. It can't all be on Brian Lewerke. He tried as best he could last year before he got hurt to carry the team. And to some extent he did, but they just weren't good enough. They haven't been good enough at running the football. They need to come up with a solution there.
They'll be all right on defense?
They're going to be elite on defense.
Why?
Because they've got 8 starters back.
Okay.
Big talent at all 3 levels of that defense.
Right.
They'll be fine. They'll be fine. It's going to be a very good defense.
It is amazing to me when teams like that with such inept offenses, because Michigan State kept it together on defense last year.
They did,
when things were just totally shut down on offense. That's always impressive.
I think they're going to be very good on defense. One of the best defenses in the country. I have the same questions you do about the offense.
Okay.
But a lot of returning talent, maybe 9-3. Could see 10-2. Wow.
Whoa! Did you see their alternate uniforms?
I don't like them.
No.
I don't like them at all.
I don't like them.
They look like they're about to play a game of laser tag, Dan. I don't like it.
Yeah, I tweeted it comparing it to the look of an absinthe bottle. Mm-hmm. It's not great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you know what the thing is that always bothers me about, like, we had those, like, copper-tinted Michigan State alt uniforms a couple years ago.
Oh, get it out,
what
girl. Always, yeah.
What, did you like those?
No.
No, I didn't like those at all.
No.
The state script that the basketball team has, I think, is so cool. And they should lean into that sort of retro-y modern look for football. But maybe they have, and I just forgot. But I love that state script. Love it so much.
All right, Dan, let's move on. I want to talk about the difference between a custom-made suit and an off-the-rack suit.
There it is.
It's like night and day.
Yeah.
Get your suit from Indochino, longtime sponsor. Get a personalized suit. It's exciting. It's easy. Here is how this thing works. You can visit one of Indochino's 40 showrooms across North America, like Dan Rubenstein over there did.
I did.
Stylist
in Brooklyn.
Will take your measurements. They'll help you pick out your fabric, your styles. Or you can take your measurements at home and shop online at Indochino.com. And a professionally tailored suit will be mailed to you. It's going to show up at your door in a couple of weeks.
Wow.
Talk about the experience.
I just got the confirmation. I'm so excited.
Talk about your experience, Dan. Did it fit well? Did you like it? What was that like?
Well, I haven't received my suit yet, but the process going to the showroom was terrific. It was thorough. They were nooks and crannies. What was the term you used to use? The natural geometry?
Sure.
Yep. They were having every sort of rope and ruler was measuring things like I was Gulliver.
Can I ask a very real question here?
Please.
I have ADD when I go to like a restaurant and they've got a big menu.
Right.
And whenever I read this ad, they talk about being able to personalize every aspect of the suit.
Correct.
Were you overwhelmed by that process or what was that like?
Not really, because they would say, like, what shape pocket do you want here? And there would be pictures. There would be referencing pictures.
They have the pictures.
Like, do you want it rounded or do you want it regular? And I was like, okay, I'll go with A. Mm-hmm. I'll go with B. So they made it very easy. And so I have a suit liner. It's just Ed Warner's face over and over.
Sure.
And so I couldn't be more thrilled to be receiving this suit because I got a weird shaped body and Indochino's taking care of me at a super reasonable price. And I'm going to look smashing, Ty. I'm going to look really, really good.
This week, our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit, just $369 at Indochino.com when you enter Solid at checkout. That's 50% off. The average cost of a premium made-to-measure suit, shipping's free. That is Indochino.com, Indochino.com. Your promo code is Solid. One more time, any premium suit, just $369. And free shipping. Once you go custom, you don't go back. Speaking,
that's
Dan,
true.
Of going back, let's talk about Jeff Brohm.
Okay. Whoa. Pro.
Jeff Brohm elects to stay at Purdue. He had offers from Louisville, maybe other places. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But
the Allentown Iron Pigs?
Yeah. Never know.
Never stops. Yeah.
At Purdue this season, he's losing three offensive linemen. He's losing his top two running backs from a year ago. I hate to ask this question because it's going to sound like I'm really down on Purdue, and I'm really not. I'm really always rooting for this team. I love Purdue.
Right. Sure.
But truly, is there enough talent on this roster right now to fill in all the gaps they're going to have and still somehow, some way contend or qualify for a bowl game?
If you watched any of their bowl game last year, that's a good question. I was really hoping you were going to say, I have a big question. Can their drum get any bigger? can they expand the drum? No, it's a reasonable question. It hinges on a couple of pretty huge things. And that's one, Elijah Sindelar, and two, the defense. And, you know, the Sindelarity was very good against Minnesota and Arizona, I believe, 2 years ago, and that's kind of it. It was not great at all starting the season last year. If you remember, they lose to Eastern Michigan. They have, you know, they go back and forth against Mizzou, but lose that game. They have Rondale Moore in a losing effort against Northwestern to open the season, so they start 0-3, and then they have, you know, this incredible high against Ohio State, big emotional game at home. They ran all right. They threw it well with David Blau, and they were good at generating big plays, but man, did the defense take a huge step back last year? Because 2 years ago, they have this experienced defense, especially up front. And then they were below average against pretty much everything last year. And they have one of the most exciting dudes in the country in Rondale Moore. And some inexperienced dudes, like you're mentioning, you know, a running back and receiver around him. And the line is really thin. I'm not feeling good. you know, the best case is, you know, the defense shores up and Elijah Sindelar looks like what David Blau looked like last year and they can go 8-4. But I see like 3 or 4 different ways that they could go 4-8 or 5-7.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
He's running for his life behind that line. Their schedule is pretty tricky. I mean, it's on the road against Nevada, Vanderbilt, and TCU. It's not pushover games. They go to Penn State. They go to Iowa. Their November is tricky with Nebraska on the road against Northwestern, on the road against Wisconsin. You know, the Oaken Bucket game at least is at home, but Indiana is looking better and better. So I have them scrapping for bowl eligibility again.
Yeah.
And it's going to come down to those 50-50 games.
That's how it feels.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Sorry.
We're next.
All right. Oh, man. With a tone of defeat in his voice.
No, you know, I'm rooting for Jeff Brom. I'm rooting for Purdue, but I looked at it too, and I'm thinking, I don't see it. I don't know how it happens. I hope it does.
It's tough.
I also realize I've said that each of the last 2 years about Purdue, but this year, really, truly, I don't know how it happens if they get to a bowl.
Yeah. Fair enough. But, you know, I think not a lot of that, but there's a little bit of the taste left in our mouths after last year's bowl game where they're just completely run off the field.
Yeah, they got run off.
So, speaking of which, Penn State
did
play Michigan last year and looked kind of the same way. their offense fell off kind of significantly last year, which surprised me, given how they've recruited, given Trace McSorley's experience going into the season. I thought he was at best average in Ricky Rodney's offense.
He was hurt.
He was hurt.
For a big chunk of the year.
For that reason, he looked very average with a good amount of experience around him. So can you see Penn State doing drastic things to improve this offense? Or are they in their heads saying what you're saying, that they were beat up? A healthy Sean Clifford's going to be better than a beat up Trace McSorley. They have, you know, it was with Ricky Slade was the number one running back a couple years ago. Yep, KJ Hamler showed out last year. Justin Shorter was the number one receiver recruit last year. You know, defensively, they returned a top 10 national defense. Are they trying to overhaul things, or is it just an offseason tweak?
I don't think it's an overhaul. I don't think it's an overhaul.
Should it be?
I don't think it needs to be. I think it's overhaul enough, given the fact that Sean Clifford is now stepping in as starting quarterback.
Okay. Do you like him?
I do. You know, the more I read about him, we haven't seen a whole lot of Sean Clifford, but former blue chipper, former Elite 11 kid. He's got a big arm. Not quite the mobility of Trace McSorley, but quick enough to extend plays, which is really all you need. What I like about him is he seems like a real football nerd. And I mean that in a very good way. He's super intense about the minutiae. A lot of folks touting the leadership. All things you hear this about everybody, right? But these are things you like to hear. He committed to Penn State very early on, so he's exactly where he wants to be. And he waited his turn behind a starting quarterback that was there forever. In Trace McSorley thought
David
he was...
Eckstein.
David, thought he was going to have to battle Tommy Stevens for the job, but Tommy Stevens bolted, and now it seems like it's fallen in his lap. They haven't officially given him the job yet, but he's going to be the guy. What I'm curious to see, though, on the offensive side is how the play calling looks in year two now under Ricky Rodney. There were a couple moments last year where he was overly conservative. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was quite big games or what caused it.
Mm-hmm.
But some spots where he was very conservative, where it felt like he was playing not to lose, where the offense got a little predictable. There were other moments where it seemed like, wow, this is a guy who knows what he's doing. And then there were a very small fraction of plays where you were curious what the grand scheme was. I don't think they need an overhaul. I think they're going to get a personnel overhaul, which will change the way the offense looks to some degree. But as long as they can make some modifications to what we saw last year, I think they're going to be in a good spot. Where there was an issue, though, and a big one, was at wide receiver. I talked about it earlier. Josh Gattis leaves a couple years later. Guys are dropping passes. They're not getting open. They need to play better. Pets' heads are falling off, sure. KJ Hamler, I think, is the name that you know, that you love, know that we love. He's very good out wide. He represents a player that you might see used differently.
Yeah.
Because of his speed. He's a guy to keep your eye. Yeah. What do you say? Gravitational player?
Yeah.
Keep your eye on what they do with KJ Hamler. Outside of him, though, they're going to need Jahan Dotson. They're going to need Justin Shorter to step up out wide. They've also got Pat Freiermuth at tight end, which is the ultimate safety valve. Led the team in TD receptions as a freshman last year. Having that big target's going to help Sean Clifford. But
sure,
they got to get better out wide. I don't know what's going to happen with Ricky Slade at running back. We'll see. Line should be okay, even though they lose Ryan Bates and Connor McGovern.
Mm-hmm. Those are starting tackles, right?
Yeah, they've got enough talent that I think they should be able to plug in. The line will be fine. It's not going to be
recruited very well.
They've recruited extremely well. They've got the talent to plug and play. Mm-hmm. It's not going to ever get to the point, hopefully, of like the offensive line crisis of 2012. Like, it's going to be okay, even though they lose two guys who played at a really high level. I'm excited to see what that looks like. The defense, though, is if you've got no other reason to watch Penn State football, the defense is going to be a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Because they're young, they're mobile, agile, hostile. I'd like
to
see
a dude named Etor.
Etor Grossmatos, yeah.
Yeah.
They need to get better against the run. But
yeah.
Etor Grossmatos, YGM.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. A ton of talent at defensive end. A ton of talent. They've got more guys than they know what to do with. They got Micah Parsons back at linebacker, who led the team in tackles as a freshman. That's after they moved him from defensive end. And the schedule, I think, is pretty favorable. It's about as good as you could want for being in the Big Ten East.
I also learned, by the way, on defense, John Reed is back.
He's for like his 18th year. He's like John Stocco, yeah.
Oh, incredible. Okay, schedule.
Schedule's about as favorable as you could want for being in the Big Ten East. It's all going to come down to October. October will decide whether it's an 8-4 season or a 10-2 season.
Where are you leaning right now?
I'm leaning 9-3, right in the middle.
Right smack dab in the middle. Those three losses come against Ohio State, Michigan, and?
Ohio State, Michigan, and I think a dumb one.
Oh, no. Like last year's Michigan State game?
I think a dumb one. Now, they're on the road at Michigan State this year. I don't necessarily think it's going to be that one, but it's going to be off the radar.
So that means Minnesota, Purdue, Iowa's on the radar. They've lost to Iowa.
They're on the radar.
Actually, they looked good against Iowa last year. But Pitt?
No.
My beautiful 4-8 darlings?
No, I don't think Pitt.
That's an ABC game, by the way, that Pitt game. Okay, so they'll lose something weird. So you're thinking in the Indiana, Minnesota, Purdue, Maryland, phylum
yes.
is where that's happening.
Yes.
Okay. What's your next question?
Next question, Dan.
Okay.
Let's talk about Minnesota.
Oh, I thought you'd never ask.
Minnesota has the Big Ten West's most experienced offense. They've got a light non-conference schedule. As far as I can tell here, a relatively easy slate of crossover games. Can PJ Fleck and the Golden Gophers get to 9 wins? Is that possible?
So I'm going to take exception with a couple of things you said. I think going to Fresno is difficult. They pulled that game out in the last second last year. I think playing Georgia Southern, who beat App State, my beloved Mountaineers of Boone, North Carolina, that's a big deal. They had a terrible situation with their quarterback last week, Shai Wirtz. And that's all resolved and good for him. But that's tricky. That's tricky for a team that did definitely finish really nicely on defense last year, but has a propensity against, you know, some not so good teams to give up some yardage. So I think your question is fair. I think their absolute ceiling is probably 8-4 right now.
Okay.
I have made peace with Tanner Morgan. I think he's fine. When you start talking about 9 wins, we start getting into the combination of defense and quarterback. And I am not there with Minnesota yet, but I like that Rodney Smith is coming back and that they're going to pair him with Muhammad Ibrahim, who looked obviously terrific in their bowl, just demolishing of Georgia Tech. So they're strong in the backfield. Tanner Morgan's probably going to win this job over Zach Ehrenstad, which is very fun to say. Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman are very quietly one of the better wide receiver duos in the nation.
Yeah.
Tyler Johnson, he's local. He's an all-timer for Minnesota. Rashad Bateman, we actually talked about him going into his freshman year last year as being excited to see him. Ton of experience on the line, as you sort of alluded to. They need to get better. They allowed a lot of sacks. The run game was pretty inconsistent. You know, Daniel Fatele, whatever, is going to get a lot of attention. Sorry, was that dismissive? I didn't mean to be dismissive. Did you like that? He's 6'9", 400 pounds.
Yeah.
It's a fantasy thing, but I don't think it's an actual fantasy thing. Like, his size is going to be mentioned 11 times a
game.
The
big fella, yeah.
He's large.
A lot of pet nicknames.
He is, like, he's bigger than Jonathan Ogden. He's big.
Yeah.
And I think he's pretty good for being as inexperienced as he is. 9 wins is pushing it, though. They struggled a good deal on defense in the back end. And the Big Ten West should be able to throw some. And we're getting into a couple more quarterbacks there. I should highlight and spotlight, even though I said, you know, up front they're not that good, Carter Coughlin is that good. He is their like hybrid outside linebacker, rush end. He's all Big Ten caliber. He is Mr. Havoc for the Gophers. So they, in spots like running back and receiver and, you know, this rush end, they're very interesting, but they need to put it together a little more often because it was pretty uneven last year. And when you look at their schedule, they were only like competitive in 2 games. It was competitive in that they were relatively close near the end of the game. They were either separating themselves from teams or just getting demolished by teams. So there probably needs to be more consistently for 4 quarters at a time. And I think a lot of that comes down to turnovers. So still too many questions for me to get to 9 wins, but the potential to take a nice step forward exists. The worst case is the defense regresses without a good line and the secondary stays pretty leaky at 5-7. So I'm going to say they're a 7-5 team this year.
I'm a huge Tyler Johnson fan.
He's so good. Both of those guys.
Huge fan of Tyler Johnson.
But yeah, I was watching clips of Tanner Morgan because I honestly have not, you know, I don't spend June and July watching a lot of Minnesota football or Georgia Tech football or whoever football. I just don't. I like hanging out with Jody with an I and the Solid Baby. So I did a refresher on Tanner Morgan, and man, does he look, he tries hard. He really goes for it. And I like that. There's a lot of effort there, but that it's not for me.
A lot of effort there. Nice.
As a team competing for the division, nice. I need more. I just need a little bit more from the Gophers.
All right, Dan. Give me a question here.
You know what? Let's talk about your precious Indiana. They get better.
Yeah, let's do it.
They get better on offense last year with a key injury at quarterback, and they still managed to have a nice season.
Yep.
But took a pretty significant step back on defense, which seems uncharacteristic from what we've seen of Tom Allen. When he goes places, their defenses improve. And it did at Indiana when he was the coordinator, but takes a step back last year as he assumes the head coaching role. Is it a course correction thing to you? You know, is it getting to just be okay on defense? How far away are they from getting back to a bowl?
Well, okay. 2 different questions. I'll start with the bowl question here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm excited about Indiana.
Always are.
Not always. Last couple years, I've been excited about Indiana.
Yeah.
I don't mean to say I'm like 9-3 excited. Okay. I'm not even sure I meet 8-4, but they do have 7 guys back on each side of the ball.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be enough feistiness on the offensive side to win 6 or 7 games and maybe scare the crap out of Ohio State in week 3. That's kind of my big prediction.
I just remember you saying things about Stevie Scott that made me think, is Solid Wife Kate in a good place with you? Do you have wandering eyes towards Bloomington?
Well, I love Stevie Scott, but okay. They're replacing 3 of 5 starters up front.
Yeah.
And that will have a direct impact on one Steven Scott.
Okay.
Another big kid, a lot of promise for Indiana, rushed over 1,100 yards, had 10 touchdowns last year as a freshman. He was on my dude watch list.
For sure.
Like him, but I've got questions about that line. I'm real curious to see what happens just with the offense as a whole. Because they hired Kalen DeBoer away from Fresno to come in and run the offense. Now, this is already a system that threw a lot. But now you bring DeBoer in from Fresno, and Fresno threw an awful lot. He's on the record talking about how they want to get more explosive, how that's a priority for this coming season. I don't know if it's Peyton Ramsey or if it's going to be someone else at quarterback, but they just couldn't throw deep, and they need to get better in this area, which is part of the reason why, I reiterate, I'm high on Nick Westbrook. I think he's in line for a big year, led the team in targets a year ago. That being said, you're right in saying that rushing defense has been an issue, not just last year, really the last decade. And I don't know the answer to the question on that front. I don't know how angry, I don't know what it takes, honestly, to sort that out. They've got to make a tweak. They've just got to get better. I don't have an answer for you. I don't know, because it's continually been an issue for them. The schedule does not present as a murderer's row, but they're in the East, so they've already got those four games that look like easy losses, both of the Michigan schools, Ohio State and Penn State. They've also got a road game at Nebraska, a road game at Purdue. They've got a home game against Northwestern from the West. They get Michigan at home, which is my favorite letdown look-ahead spot of the year.
You don't just go to Bloomington.
That's right. Michigan coming off a home game against State a week before a home game against Ohio State. They go to Bloomington. That's my favorite letdown look-ahead spot. Indiana, I'm high on Indiana because I think it could go a bunch of different directions. I like the hire of DeBoer away from Fresno. I like the young talent on this team. Have no idea what happens along the line or at quarterback or on defense.
Okay.
So your guess is as good as mine.
Thanks for sharing.
I'm just being honest here.
No, I know.
I honestly don't know. I know what's going on. I don't know what's going to happen.
Quick thing I didn't realize, Kalen DeBoer replaced Mike DeBoard?
I believe that's right, yes.
Okay, great. I like how they didn't stray too far. Mike DeBoard retires, but an opportunity arose in January of this year when the San Diego Fleet of the AAF lost their offensive coordinator, John Kitna, who's now the quarterback's coach of the Dallas Cowboys, to take his place, and I'm quoting Wikipedia here, take his place, the Fleet hired Mike DeBoer, reuniting him with San Diego Fleet head coach Mike Martz. I didn't know any of this. I'm glad to have learned it on our show.
Does this mean that Kalen DeBoer is the present tense of Mike DeBoer?
Yes. Which, okay, so if Kalen DeBoer is the present tense of Mike DeBoer, the future tense will be somebody named Will DeBoer? I got to ask my mom. She's a linguistics expert. But yeah, I think that's right. We have to learn how to conjugate Deborah if we're ever going to succeed in accurately breaking down Indiana offense.
Okay.
In all fairness, they did get better on offense. Peyton Ramsey, I think, was fine last year.
He couldn't throw deep, but he was fine otherwise.
He was fine. They could be entertaining. They could be feisty.
They're going to be entertaining.
They get better.
And they've got feistiness on offense.
Yeah.
You said that somebody tries real hard. Tanner Morgan tries very hard.
I'm telling you, you watch clips of him, you're like, man,
no, I believe you. I'm just saying. My compliment was a little bit more upbeat than that one.
Okay. He does try.
He does.
Irrefutable.
Let's talk about another quarterback.
Okay.
Hunter Johnson making some waves. He was, all world everything. Quarterback signed with Clemson. I think wisely got out when Trevor Lawrence came to town because he wasn't playing over him. Now he ends up at Northwestern. And this is a big deal for Northwestern. It's been a long time since they had a guy of this caliber playing quarterback. Haven't seen him, mind you, but at least on paper, looks the part, seemingly is going to be about as good at quarterback as they've ever had there. Does he elevate? Do you expect him to elevate the Northwestern offense in any kind of meaningful way? And at this juncture in mid-August, do we have any way of being confident about whatever you're about to say?
So What I'm about to try to convey is the word no with a question mark at the end, which is a terrible answer to your question. No? So the problem with Northwestern's offense hasn't been because they haven't had talented quarterbacks, because it seems like, even though they don't really play all that often, that there's interest from the NFL, guys like Trevor Siemian, yeah, that were fine. But they've had the same offensive coordinator for going on at least a decade, Mike McCall. So this is Danalytics, in that it's not Danalytics. This is from our friend Brian Fremo, who runs the FEI. So these are the offensive points per drive, which is something I appreciate. Oh, boy, and there's no garbage time. Here are the last decade or so of Northwestern's offensive football. So doesn't matter how quickly or how slowly you play. It's just what you do per drive. 99th, 70th, 67th, 117th, 103rd, 82nd, 57th in 2012. Shout out Dan Persa and Kane Coulter. I believe that was like the duo.
Yeah.
28th in 2011. Hell yeah. But then 66th, 77th, 67th, 62nd. So Northwestern fielding average offenses is pretty rare. And so maybe it happens with Hunter Johnson and maybe, you know, with Isaiah Bowser next to him. This was a pretty terrible rushing team last year. They replaced a lot along the offensive line. Not a great combination to me. They kind of have an interesting receiver in Bennett Skoronek. It's been a mainstay there. PJ Flynn's gone. They've got good names, but it's not a lot of proven, interesting, fun, highlighty names. It's a pretty big question up front. It's a new offensive line coach. They need a pretty giant jump up front there. The good news for Hunter Johnson is, I think alley-oop-wise, the defense will put the offense, again, in a pretty good position. Field position-wise, turnovers-wise, whatever. Joe Gaziano's, he's a star up front. He's got decent pieces around him. Patty Fisher, I mentioned on the Dude episode, he's all over the place.
That's with two Ds, right?
Two Ds, yep. Patty Fisher. The secondary is experienced. They should be fine. You know, we've gotten to the point where I think benefit of the doubt is probably too strong a phrase with the Northwestern defense, but you can count on them for being, you know, a probably top five unit in the Big Ten, if not better. So schedule, there's a rough stretch on this schedule, and they open at Stanford week one. It's the stretch is Michigan State, at Wisconsin, at Nebraska. I have BYU here, but it might be a bye. I don't believe it's BYU. It may just be a typo. Ohio State, Iowa. That's a rough stretch. That is a not super fun bit of football for Northwestern. But year after year, they get pretty good quarterback play and a disappointing offense and a good defense. So if Hunter Johnson's very good, if the offense has its moments behind a better line, gets to okay, they have the 64th best offense in the country or something, going 10-2. They just are. If Hunter Johnson is just okay, the line is still the secondary is hit or miss, they're going 7-5. So I have them at 8 or 9 wins. So that's how I feel. Do you have any Northwestern thoughts? Hunter Johnson thoughts? I've seen him play a little bit. He hasn't really played meaningful snaps.
He hasn't played meaningful snaps. That's why I asked the question. I honestly don't know, but I think it's exciting. Believe it or not, we do have a ton of Northwestern fans that listen to this show.
Yeah.
And it's just exciting to have a high level prospect such as Hunter Johnson playing quarterback.
I watched a lot of Northwestern football a few years ago with our pal Roger Sherman.
Yeah.
And they've always been pretty good. And despite that, watching with Roger was a lot of moments of like watching him sing, "I hate everything, I hate everything," to like the tune of Super Mario 2.
Yeah.
So I for his sake, hope that this is the year that Hunter Johnson is that talent. We're like, oh man, Northwestern's offense is dealing.
Do it for Roger.
Do it for Roger.
Roger's a good dude. Do it for Roger.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
I'm gonna
ask you about Indiana again.
No.
Let's go back to Bloomington.
No. Let's do it.
Okay. Who do we have left here?
We got Maryland and Rutgers.
Okay. I'm pretty down on Maryland.
Okay.
I don't know if you are. What is that? Even 5 wins to me seems kind of like a stretch. I know they get Josh Jackson, but what does a 5 plus win Maryland team look like in 2019?
All right. They were 5-7 last year.
Yeah.
And they decided to go a different direction at head football coach, brought in Michael Oxley. He's from the area, came over from Alabama, knows the area well, which is a
great fantasy thing. Knows the DMV area.
Knows the area well. You're going to hear it time and again. Here is the problem that I see for Maryland. I'll start with the schedule. Before November, they've got Howard, Syracuse, tough game, at Temple, Penn State, tough game, at Rutgers, at Purdue, Indiana, and Minnesota. Now, that doesn't strike me as a cakewalk, but it is supremely easier than their November, where they've got Michigan, at Ohio State, home against Nebraska, and at Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
It's very possible they lose all four of those games.
Yeah.
They lose all four of those games, and that means they got to beat Cuse, Rutgers, Purdue, Indiana, Minnesota. Like, there's just not a lot of wiggle room there. And I'm not sure how it happens, if it happens. I like Mike Loxley. I like the fact that he's got a passion for coaching in this area. I do.
You fell into the trap.
I do. I like it.
Yeah.
I like that he brings Josh Jackson over from Virginia Tech. He's most likely going to be the starter. I like Anthony McFarland. We talked about him on the Dude Watch list. A great freshman campaign. But the wideouts are really young. They're all sophomores or redshirt sophomores, which is crazy. The offensive line has some experience, but not a lot of depth. And the defense last year couldn't generate any pressure. Now they get a big boost. Shaq Smith is transferring over from Clemson, which opens some eyes. But otherwise, they got a lot to figure out here. And I don't know how they get to five wins. Yeah. I could see a step back. I could see a 4-8. I could see even a 3-9.
What if Mike Loxley makes it super clear how much he likes coaching in the DMV area? Because that was the reason you gave for why Maryland is something to be excited about long term. Yeah, I think we're on the same page.
Well, look,
here.
But okay, longer term, the area is rich with talent. It's always been.
Yeah, there's pretty good players there. Yeah.
And I remember we made the joke about Randy Etzel. When Randy Etzel came down and took his dream job, that was one of the things that he highlighted. He wanted to try and keep those kids close to home.
Right.
I don't know if they've been all that successful doing that. Mike Loxley's a good recruiter and has been for a while. Yeah. He knows the area. He's got these pipelines. Hopefully that can bear some fruit for the Terrapins.
Okay. Do you have the those little headlines that are on the bottom of every website, like the sponsored headlines? And it's like, these three things in tacos may kill you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm looking at the Maryland schedule right now, and this probably has nothing to do with Maryland football. But I have Steve Miller sells Island Compound for less than half the original asking price. The early signs of type 2 diabetes, and it's a picture of an older hand feeling an older foot. I have no-show socks, and I have cowboy boots are taking over New York, parentheses, here's why.
Is that true?
These are all, not to my not to my eyes, but you know, I don't see everything. I have no idea what I've clicked to get to this point. I enjoy Steve Miller. I'm not worried about type 2 diabetes. I do wear socks. I don't wear boots.
Maryland football in a nutshell.
Maryland football. Okay. Where are we going next?
The other, let's just do Rutgers while we're
let's
here.
Let's do Rutgers. Okay. My question about Rutgers. I wrote this down because I'm very serious about this preview. To quote the immortal Chaka Khan.
Chaka Khan. Great.
Tell me something good about Rutgers.
I like Raheem.
I'm all about positivity.
I like Raheem Blackshear.
Yeah.
At running back. And another guy named Isaiah, whose last name I have no idea how to pronounce. Starts with a P-A-C-H-E-C-O.
Okay.
Pacheco? Pacheco? Pacheco?
We could just look it up on YouTube.
I could, but I didn't.
Okay.
My point here is that if there's going to be a bright spot on the offense, it's probably the ground attack. The ground attack. They feel actually pretty good about it. Now, they were 1-11 last year, and they close out this year with Ohio State and Michigan State in Piscataway, followed by a road trip to Penn State. It looks like another 1-11 or 2-10 year to me because they gave up 31 points per game on defense last year. And I just don't see it improving all that much. But if we're going to find something to be happy or excited about, I think the ground game should be okay. Mm-hmm. I am curious to see what happens with my boy King Arthur Sitkowski.
Ugh.
Because the passing game last year was a disaster. He threw 18 picks. That was the most in the nation. Rutgers as a whole was a turnover machine. They were negative 14 in turnover margins. And the line just, they couldn't pass protect. Receivers couldn't get open. When they were open, they were dropping passes. Just a lot of slow decision making there in the passing game. So passing game needs to improve. Running game is something. Something to not be too down on.
Okay. Fair enough.
Let me go to Illinois.
Drive for six.
The last Big Ten team.
Yeah.
On your side here. Okay. They extended Lovie Smith for two additional years, despite winning nine games in his first three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got a lot of, I guess, returning production coming back or returners coming back.
Yeah.
Give me your drive to six projection this year. Is the drive to six something that we can reinstall as part of our weekly shows?
I'm not thinking so. And they don't have a quarterback. It's Brandon Peters. And interestingly enough, Isaiah Williams, who was quarterback, huge quarterback recruit, but listed as sort of an athlete and the same name as Juice Williams. So that's interesting nickname potential for us. We call the next Juice Williams. Defense was just, you know, if I'm, again, going to hammer home combination of quarterback and defense, it was just a mess last year. The offense was improved. They ran the ball. They beat Rutgers. They dropped 50, 60 points against Minnesota in a win, but nothing else for them was competitive. They made Northwestern interesting at the end there. They couldn't throw the ball, a lot of turnovers. And their defense needs to, I mean, the starting point for their defense is they were truly abysmal against the run last year. And that was matched only by how horrid they were against the pass. So that's the starting point of a bowl-eligible potential defense. And there's a couple pieces in the secondary, but up front I don't like a lot. So they've got a Michigan-Wisconsin combo in October. You know, they're on the road against Michigan State before a bye, and then at Iowa and Northwestern. I guess the absolute best-case scenario is Brandon Peters is pretty good. He's the good version of Brandon Peters. If he ends up starting the season for them, who knows what happens after that. It's a fairly easy non-con, you know, beat Rutgers, and a fifth win would be against a team who has a hurt quarterback. That's what I have down here. You know, the worst case scenario is 2-10 because of more of the same. And I don't want people to get hurt.
No.
But situationally, that does help bad teams win games.
All right.
That's what I have for Illinois. So I think they're going to be more in the 4-8. That's my most realistic 3 or 4-8. For the Illini, unfortunately, they have a ton of USC transfers. So the talent level is up in Champaign. There's at least a little bit of, there's a glimmer of hope at Papa Dell's there in Champaign, Illinois.
I think their uniforms are cool. I like their unis.
I do like their uniforms. I like that color combo. I like the sort of straightforwardness of them. But that's what I have for the Illini. And I think out of the West, I'm going to go with Iowa.
Okay.
I'm going with Iowa here. I think they edge out Northwestern.
Yeah.
I think we have Iowa, Michigan in the championship game.
I am tempted to go Nebraska, but I just don't trust the defense.
Okay.
And I like Northwestern, but your talk about what they've done on offense has really spooked me.
Man,
so
rough.
I think,
but they win despite it.
They do win despite it. And I think that speaks to what Pat Fitzgerald has built, how good of a coach he is.
You know what their offense reminds me of?
Mm.
Yeah. I most of my life now when I'm at home is watching the solid baby. He can't quite crawl yet, but right. He does the army crawl thing where he's just sort of dragging himself with his forearms across his mat. He gets to where he wants to go. And that worries me that he's a Northwestern man in training.
Sure.
So, I don't know.
I'm gonna
have
to get back to you on who I'm picking here. I don't know.
Okay, so Notre Dame.
Notre Dame, right. Last team here.
Is Notre Dame a playoff caliber program right now? And by that I mean, should the expectation, no matter who's starting a quarterback, no matter what, you know, the depth looks like in a particular year, have they now reached the point where, you know, they have these letdown moments? Who was it last year? It was Vandy, Ball State, and Pitt. They weren't really seriously challenged in the regular season against their better opponents. So is my assumption, should my assumption, should America's assumption be with Notre Dame? Yeah, they should be, you know, we should consider them a playoff threat every year now.
I think we are there, yes.
Okay, explain. Show your work.
I do think we are there. They have recruited strongly over the span now of Brian Kelly's tenure in South Bend. So this is a team that very slowly has been establishing itself as, I think, belonging on that stage, and they've now finally got the blue chip talent to back it up. I think it's totally fair to put them in that category. They're not in the same category, though, as Alabama or Clemson. They're not in the same category, I don't think, as Georgia or Ohio State. But they're sort of like right on that cusp, whatever cusp it is that comes after that elite grouping of teams at the very top. Notre Dame has been very, very good in the recruiting department.
So who worries you on this schedule this year?
There are three games that decide the season for Notre Dame. We've put all this time in talking about the Illinois and Northwesterns and whoever else in the Big Ten. In many ways, this Notre Dame preview was the easiest one that I had to put together because there are three games on the schedule that are going to decide the fate. There's a road game at Georgia. There's a road game at Michigan. And then there's a road game, a cursed road game, damn it to hell, end of the year against Stanford.
Okay.
Those are the three games that ultimately decide it. To a lesser degree, you've got home games against Virginia the week after Georgia and Virginia Tech, which is the week after Michigan.
Michigan, yeah.
Those could be a little letdowny, but it's really those three games that I think are going to decide it. And that's sort of my first point of, I don't know, reference as we look at 2019 with Notre Dame. That's the starting point here. The second thing to point out is that this year's team is kind of the opposite of last year's team. I remember when I did the preview with you last year, where we really liked Notre Dame's leadership and talent on defense, and we had all these questions about the offense and Brandon Wimbush. This year, it's reversed. This year, the defense loses big guns at all three levels. Meanwhile, the offense is mostly intact. And that probably means more pressure on Chip Long and certainly more pressure on Ian Book to generate bigger plays and score more points while the defense is figuring it out. But a little bit of a role reversal now as we look at 2019. What they need to do on offense is they need to generate more of those big plays. I don't know how they do it, but the vertical passing game last year was an issue for Ian Book. Some of those passes he threw deep when he had guys open were not great, Dan. Not great at all.
Not great, Bob.
Got to get better accuracy on that deep ball. They need to convert just a handful more of them, and it makes them better as an offense. That's the first thing. Secondly, I don't know what the running game looks like this year. I have no idea.
Why?
Well, they lose Dexter Williams. He's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're in a position where they've got Jafar Armstrong, who's a converted wideout, was nicked up last year. He's more of a jack-of-all-trades type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got Tony Jones Jr., who's a senior, more physical, more north-south. I don't know if either of those guys is really the answer at running back, but they need to get something that is a little bit more consistent out of that ground attack. And then on the defensive side, they need to get better at stopping the run game. There's some questions this year about defensive tackle. They lose Jerry Tillery. A lot of turnover at linebacker as well. Drew Tranquil, he's gone.
My guy.
But the secondary looks pretty good. At corner, they're loaded back there at safety with Alohi Gilman and Jalen Elliott. Maybe Kyle Hamilton fits in.
Who's the new guy you like? You
Kyle Hamilton,
all hot and bothered.
Kyle Hamilton. He had three picks off Phil Jurkovec on the first day of fall camp.
Uh-huh.
Which probably says more about Phil Jurkovec than Kyle Hamilton. But
okay.
I believe Hamilton is now up to 5 interceptions in fall camp at time of recording. Wow. He was a 5-star kid from Georgia, I want to say, committed to Notre Dame. He has been making a splash to the extent where the coaching staff is trying to find other ways that they can utilize him. Like maybe he could play tight end.
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe he'll play running back this year. Who the hell knows?
So if your concern is with the offense, what I'm hearing is the new college football drive for 6 is Notre Dame scoring a playoff touchdown. Yes?
My concern isn't with the offense, though. That's not what you're hearing.
Okay.
I have questions about how they can make the offense better.
Okay.
My concern, though, is mostly with how they replace some of the spine of that defense.
Okay.
Up the middle, who's stopping the run? At the first level. At the second level, who are your linebackers now that Tavon Coney, Drew Tranquil are gone? Really right up the gut is my question with this team.
Do you like Clark Lee?
I do like Clark Lee.
Okay.
I think they've got a great coaching staff in place. And I think they're going to be able to get after the passer. But how they stop the run is going to mean a lot and ultimately tell us which direction this team's going. So
best case is what? 11-1, 12-0 again?
Probably, yeah.
Worst case,
9-3.
And why do they go 9-3?
I think they go 9-3 because first off, that Georgia game is tough in Athens, and I don't see them winning that game. I could also see a situation in which they drop a game against Virginia in a letdown spot. That one terrifies me. And that Michigan game is going to be tough.
Yeah.
If Michigan's better on offense, if they could find a way to pull Notre Dame apart with this new speed and space thing that Josh Gattis is trying to trot out there,
yeah,
that could make the spine of the defense very susceptible. So there are losses on
probably
schedule.
You know who loves hashtag speed and space? Jay Paterno.
I don't know. I'm excited about Notre Dame. Of course, got blown out in the playoff semifinal last year, but
yeah,
I think it's an easy preview. I do. It's an easy preview. 3 big games, 2 letdowns to be careful of. And the offense should be pretty good. I just got questions on defense now.
Well, listen, if 50% of this show's hosts don't have to root for a team running the pistol, that's a win in its own
right. That is a win in its own right, yeah.
Okay, that's all I have. Big Ten and Notre Dame. Hooray!
If you are not already coming to the live shows, you still got time. We're going to send an email out this week.
Mm-hmm.
Many of you may see that email before you have a chance to listen to this show. SolidRebelTickets.com/Texas. Meet us in Dallas if you'd like. If you can't make that one and you'll be on the East Coast, SolidRebelTickets.com/DC. We'll be at Union Stage on August the 18th at the Sunday night. That show starts at 7:30, Daniel. I'm excited.
Mike Loxley likes coaching in that area.
Indeed. I will see you this weekend.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait. So we've got Texas, we got DC, we got flights, weather's looking good, we're feeling great, we have lots of material, we're in the process of organizing it all, we're going to collate it maybe, head over to a Kinko's.
Yeah.
It's very exciting times for the Solid Verbal. We really, really would love to see you. We're running low on tickets, so if you are on the fence, just come on out. It's a great time. We'd love to meet you. We'd love to see you. We do this show staring into a screen with all sorts of weird foam on the walls around us. It's a great time to meet everybody. So I really hope you can come out. That'd be great.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, we will catch you all very soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.